It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Access of Easy podcast sidekick, audio companion. This is number 311. You can subscribe to the Access of Easy newsletter on accessofeasy.com. And I hear that there's going to be a website revamp coming pretty soon, so look out for that. As always, my name is Joey. I'm here with my co-host, Len. Buddy, how are you doing over there? What's going on? Great shirt. I don't have a bomb thrower shirt. I got to get a bomb thrower shirt from Mark.
Wait, he never got you one?
I was busy at the conference and we never really touched base. I gave him one of ours, but he didn't have one of his ready. He did tell me he was going to give me one, and then we just didn't see much of each other outside of that moment, unless it was on the way to like an after party or a mixer or something. So yeah.
Oh, the funny thing then, you gave him one of our shirts and he gave me one of his shirts. I was the beneficiary of this all. I love this. So anyway, everything's good here. It's going to be raining relatively soon and hard. So I had to rush earlier. I had to wash my golf clubs because I'm going out golfing tomorrow. Fiat mining has been a tough week for me. So I'm going to thoroughly enjoy going golfing tomorrow. How about you? How's it going over there?
I'm good, man. Things are okay. I am recovering here from a bladder infection. Last like day or two have been a lot better than the few days before it. Brutal. This is like not related at all, but I've not had a bladder infection, at least not to my knowledge. Man, I tell you, there's nothing worse. There's nothing worse than having the feeling that you got to pee all the time. It just never goes away. And thankfully I got some meds last week and things are on the up and up now. But anyway, are you golfing in my neck of the woods tomorrow? Where are you golfing? Do you want to say?
Brant Valley. I'll say it if you know where that is. Yeah. Oh. So it's kind of in your neck of the woods. I could drive past you to get there. Mm-hmm. Fun course. It's a challenge and a good deal. $35 with a cart. So I'm smiling with that one. That's a good deal.
Wow.
We don't pay a lot. Nah, hey, man, where we go to play, we don't pay a lot. Usually at Chidoak, we're playing $20 and change all in. And
cart too?
It's a good walk. No. Okay. I said we walk Chidoak. It's a great walk. And normally I'd walk even Brant Valley, but comes with a cart, I can't say no.
No, absolutely not. Okay, so let's get into stuff here. Don't forget, by the way, subscribe to the YouTube channel. You're watching this on YouTube, Access of Easy. Leave a review. And when Mark gets back from his travels, we can ask him if he got any reviews, because it turns out that even though I promised to read some, I can't actually see them, I don't think. So we'll work on that. Last week's quote, Len: a person often meets his destiny on the road he took to avoid it. That was from Jean de La Fontaine. No one got it. That was a tough one. This week's quote: there is little difference in people, but that little difference makes a big difference. The little difference is attitude. The big difference is whether it is positive or negative. That's a good quote. I like that one, but I'm not sure who it's from. If you know, Papa Smurf is from Papa John, famous pizza entrepreneur. If you know, put it in the comments. Usual rules: no Googling, no looking it up.
10,000 Bitcoin will get you two Papa John pizzas. At least
it would have
back in the day. Yeah,
would have a long time ago. Yeah,
the franchise, the whole thing. But
what a story. If you get it right, you get half off. That's half off is what you get for doing a CBP promo. You actually get a free. Free domain renewal. Yeah, it's not half.
That's
off.
The better of the two.
100% off. Yeah, I don't know. We got to get that deal. Anyway, so you guys know the drill there. We look forward to seeing what your responses are. Now, Len, got five stories.
Wait. Let's talk. The trick is for us to guess it correctly, get that free deal, and parlay that to our show, and then there we go. See, that's playing
we
both
can get
sides
it and then give it away on our show.
Yeah. Anyways, so let's talk about identity theft, which is on the rise. And this is all due to an article that Mark wrote. He's traveling out there and the man's a workhorse. Where's he traveling? I don't want to say, because I don't want to dox, just in case he hasn't given that information and maybe there's people out there trying to follow him. But nonetheless, like I said, never stops working. And he wrote a piece about identity theft while abroad. And he was saying in his article that people who are on vacation could be a little lax with protecting their identification. And this could make you for a prime target for those looking for an easy score. Think about it, because a lot of information are encoded on QR codes, barcodes, and this stuff needs to be safely stored away. and not left in plain sight for like the chambermaid or anybody else coming in to clean up your hotel and get that stuff and well, take a peek and take it for themselves. These QR codes and barcodes, they might be associated with train passes or a ticket to enter a pricey tourist attraction. These are easy things to nab and sell on the open market. Mark also references in his article, they also keep your computer, your phone, your tablet, whatever it is, guarded, because getting into that could be a treasure trove for a lot of people out there. Just simply getting access to somebody's email could be a recipe for disaster, given how much is tied to somebody's email address. And Mark suggests a couple of good tips. Always keep the screen locked and also encrypt your data. But a few more tips that I'm going to throw out there that he missed. Keep your credit card information close to the vest. This is very important. Carry a bit of cash in case plastic doesn't work. A money belt, man, they look pretty crappy out there, but they're very utilitarian, and it's a good way of protecting your valuables when out of the town. And also keep photocopies of your passport in a secondary safe spot, because you never know if you might have to get to it. So again, this is coming from somebody that's living in a basement here, although I have access to the whole house. Here I am in a basement, so what do I really know? Anyways, people out there that are traveling, take care of what you're doing, because you can be a prime suspect to get your information nabbed.
I am a little younger than you and Mark, and so I will add just one piece of perspective here. I am always shocked, Len, with the number of people who demand to be given the password to the free Wi-Fi in places like the gym, coffee shops, hotels. You could not convince me. And actually, my wife and I dealt with this last year. We didn't have a problem, thankfully, but we were going over to Detroit to watch a Skins or Commanders, I guess, Lions game. And in the hotel, obviously, it's free Wi-Fi, stadium free Wi-Fi. And I said to Kenzie, my wife, I'm like, we're not doing this, okay? If there's one thing I know, being in Bitcoin and being, you know, a millennial, it's that all the data on your phone is a lot easier to get if your Bluetooth is on and if you're connected to public Wi-Fi. And you got to get away from those things, man. Mark's example here is even better. This hotel lobby computer with someone's Gmail logged in. Are you kidding me? That is like a rookie mistake. I would put a bit of blame on the hotel. The hotel really should be doing like a spot checker, the same way they do spot checks of the urinals every hour or every 2 hours. Like if someone's logged in there, log them out. Don't leave people vulnerable, because your guests make mistakes all sorts of different ways while they're staying with you. This is just another one. And it seems like the world of kind of, you know, you called it a chambermaid coming to your room. There should be people looking out for this stuff at hotels too. And there's just not. It seems like it hasn't become a priority. Maybe it should. I'm not sure. It's something to think about anyway.
Make it a robot that does it. I'm not sure if you saw that video out there of a robot cleaning a hotel toilet today. And nice. Well, if they have that out there, why can't they have something like that? Scanning to see if there's anything that should be closed up and logged off. But nonetheless, let's move on. Let's talk about Google and the controversial web integrity API. And yeah, this is looking pretty bad, because Google has proposed a new web standard called the Web Environment Integrity API. And its acronym is WEI. I'm going to call it that. I don't know if it's WEI. I'm going to call it WEI. And this API would allow websites to check whether a user's browser has been modified or tampered with in any way. And this can be used to prevent users from using things like ad blockers, cheating in web games, pirating content, all these things. And the first thought that comes to people's mind is, yeah, this might be a good thing, but further analysis, it might change your opinion after all, because critics have warned that WEI could also be used to stifle innovation and also restrict users' freedom. But furthermore, it could also hinder the usage of lesser known privacy browsers out there. And if you're not compliant, well, they could be blocked out. And I'll explain why. So the WEI is similar to Apple's App Attest and Google's Play Integrity API, which are used to prevent users from installing modified or hacked apps. The WEI would work by generating a unique fingerprint for each browser. This fingerprint would be based on factors such as the browser's configuration, installed extensions, and hardware. Websites could then use the WEI to check whether a user's browser matches the expected fingerprint. Sounds pretty invasive to me, and it gives easy way for tracking a particular user, even if you're hiding behind a VPN. And if a website finds that a user's browser has been modified, it could then refuse to serve them content. This is very scary. And this could also include blocking ads, preventing users from playing games, or even preventing them from accessing the website in totality. And WEI could also make it more difficult for developers to create a new ad-free business model. Right now, it seems too early to tell whether WEI would be adopted by the web community, but this proposal has sparked a series of debates out there. And there's a delicate balance between security and user freedom out there that could be improvised or imbalanced here as a result of all this. I don't like all this, what's going on here. Hopefully there's going to be enough backlash to put this to the back burner, but who knows? If Google wants to go ahead with it, they're such a major player, they could go ahead and do whatever they want, and they could change industry just on a dime. It's pretty crappy stuff.
They need to do this from a self-interest point of view, because as a guy who we both like and pay attention to, Lewis Rossman, has been documenting in the last little while, the Google ad model is circling the drain a little bit. No one watches the Google ads because they're not relevant. And I think most companies realize that people have such a keen eye for advertising now that they either disregard the ads entirely, skip them, or find ways around them through browser modifications, as Google calls them, as if having an ad block plugin is some kind of modification. It's just a quality of life improvement that you should have the right to make as a user. The internet is for you to browse the way you want. And so if you want to do this, you should be able to. I think about this, and you mentioned it, and I've been saying it here as well. This is for sure geared towards stopping ad blocking and making sure that advertising hits eyeballs so that Google can continue to make money from ads. I don't know if it's feasible, though, because not only is there going to be pushback, but there's just so many other tools now that people can use to browse the internet. You know, Brave is a good example. Whether you agree with the kind of, shitcoining that's going on over there and the Brave token, the way that they handle ads is pretty good, right? If you look at ads, you get paid by the person who, makes you see the ad in some altcoin denomination. It's interesting to see how this has evolved over time, right? Because Facebook, Google, you could even say Snapchat, Instagram, now that Facebook owns them or Meta owns them, have all basically built their business on this model. We will put together a mini feed of things that you follow. We will target you for things that we think might keep you on the app. And in between, we will slide in advertising that's relevant to your browsing pattern. And this is the case in every one of those platforms. I don't think that's going to be the case going forward, though. You and I have, some partiality to stuff like Nostr, for example, the Twitter alternative, where there's no ads, no algorithm, and everyone gets really a polished kind of virgin browsing experience. There's no, your timeline has not been defiled by anyone else's hands, right? And so I expect to see this kind of thing continue. And I don't know, I'd be curious to hear what you think, because you're into the FOSS stuff a little more than me. Surely there are other alternatives that would get around this fairly quickly, right? Do any come to mind immediately, or you have a guess on when you might see something like that, and maybe from who?
No, if they're going to enable this type of measure, you can't get around it. This is going to be a server-wide issue. And if you don't meet whatever requirement they have, that fingerprint requirement to show that your browser has not been tampered with, they're not going to send it over to you. So there's no FOSS alternative that I'm aware of that could get around this. And just to double back to what you're saying, last time I checked, take a guess percentage-wise, Alphabet's total revenue stream comes from revenue.
Ads, you mean?
Yeah.
14.
80%. 80% of Google's revenue is all from ads.
That's insane. 80%. That's insane. So I would have said there's like cloud stuff and cloud storage and nickel and diming users for photos and stuff like that. But you're telling me 80%? That's huge.
Yeah. Also remember that YouTube is under their umbrella and there's lots of ads there. So that's funneling. So yeah, they're tied to that. Once that dries up, if it dries up, they're on shaky footing because they have nothing else to really stand on. So they'll have to pivot hardcore to find something else that can make the money. This is one way to ensure their survival, at least for the short term. I guess as a business model, it makes sense. As a user that values privacy, no, I'm not for this. Yeah, I mean, I'll try to find another way around this if at all possible. But well, let's talk about more privacy stuff. Remember, we talked about this not too long ago, Zoom, where they backtracked on their updates to allow for indiscriminate use of customer data without user consent. And Zoom reversed its decision to use customer data to train AI models. And this was following backlash from users on social media and also users that over here on the Axis of Easy, we were not too happy with that. The company had originally updated its terms of service to allow the use of audio, video, chat, screen sharing attachments, and other communications to train its AI model. However, after users raised concerns about privacy, Zoom said it's not going to use customer data for AI training without their consent. The company has also revised its terms of service to reflect this change. And Zoom's decision to reverse course is a sign that companies are increasingly aware of the need to protect users' privacy. This is in the wake of multiple data breaches and privacy scandals. And customers are now more concerned than ever about how their data is being used. Companies also want to build on trust that their users, that they know that they're not going to be taking advantage of them, and transparency, and also how they're collecting the use of data, and also how they're going to be getting users' consent before they're able to use the data for new purposes. But looks like, you know, they just did an about face, but it doesn't mean that they could do another 180 in a not too distant future and use customers' data to train AI models. And hopefully this move is going to cause people to move away from Zoom to find some other program out there that does not have a checkered past with toying people's privacy. But Zoom, this is their footing today. They're saying they're not going to do it, but it could change tomorrow at any time, especially if it's advantageous for them. And if they could gain a whole bunch more revenue result, I could see them saying, you know what, we're going to change your terms of service again to start collecting data and train our AI models. I'm not happy with Zoom. I don't trust Zoom, and others shouldn't as well. Just my two cents.
They have to do this because they don't have another viable business model, right? Zoom, the platform for video conferencing, has sort of fallen by the wayside as Teams and Slack and Google Meet and open source stuff like Jitsi have really taken over. Even Signal and Telegram have group voice chatting that's sort of by default more secure than this could ever be. The other thing I think is funny is that Zoom, realizing this, basically, you know, had a fork in the road and tried to go both ways. They tried to add enterprise software. I don't know if you knew that Zoom started their own kind of Microsoft Teams clone, or tried to, where they added stuff like slide presentations and documents and stuff like that. And then the other direction was this, and they didn't do either of them properly. The way to handle this, I'm going to put my devil's cap on here for a sec. The way to handle this is to just ignore it. Like, if someone gets mad about you training AI models with people's data, you just ignore it. You say, this is something that every major company is doing. We're at least being transparent about it, blah, blah, blah. That's the way you handle something like this. You don't say, okay, you're right. We got we got stuck with our finger in the pie here. Sorry about that. Our hand was in the cookie jar. We're not going to do this anymore. We apologize. And then, to your point, invariably they will double back on this and find a way to monetize that data. Maybe with additional anonymization, or maybe with, you know, some fancier wordsmithing in the TOS, but they only have one way to make money, and it's not the video conferencing service anymore, because all these other platforms that people are using professionally are too sticky to make Zoom a necessary part of the day-to-day workflow. And they realize that. So I look forward to pulling up this stock chart in a year when we're doing the show and seeing it at the same level as Torstar. I assume that's going to be the case.
Well, it's going to crater, and partially due to its own decisions, but also just the general climate out there. It's not looking all that good. So, yeah. I mean, it's going to crater, but again, it's not financial advice. Do your own research, because I don't know what the hell's going on. Let's move on. We'll talk about emails that they revealed that the Arizona governor, Katie Hobbs, asked Twitter to censor critics. This is pretty damning stuff, if true. So Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs, she was engaged with Twitter and asking them to censor her critics who were calling her out for a 2017 tweet where she equated Trump supporters to neo-Nazis. I've heard this term many, many times. Hobbs claims that she was being harassed by her critics, but Twitter asked her for more evidence to support her request. Hobbs was unable to provide any evidence, so it's really just smoke more than anything else from what I can see here. Really, I think she should get in touch with Taylor Lorenz, and maybe these two could concoct a scheme and gather to, you know, get some support from the general public out there. Anyways, the request for censorship raised concerns about free speech and political bias in the era of big tech censorship. Companies like Twitter/X, whatever you want to call them these days, Google/Alphabet, ditto, Meta, They've all been under fire in the last few years for good reason, given how much censorship has been done through their platforms. But through all this, Twitter or X, they have yet to respond to the request for censorship. And Hobbs, she hasn't commented on this matter. So all this was revealed through looking at emails. And this is a bad, bad look. And it just goes to show you that there's political interference happening everywhere. And they're trying to use big tech to change the narrative and spin it in a way that is more favorable to them. So that's not looking good if this is true for Katie Hobbs. So yeah, over to you.
I don't know what else we can say about this. It hasn't been said already. It's disgusting. There's like the thinnest of skinned people in all these elected positions, it seems like. Nobody wants to be criticized. Everybody thinks they're always right. They only take softball interviews. They only answer softball questions. And now if you criticize them on Twitter from what looks to be like a NIM account, I think, like I don't see a name on this account anywhere. Yeah, like I'm guessing it's a NIM account. I'm guessing it's not a celebrity or like a major sort of conservative influencer. It's probably some rando. You got to censor this guy? Get lost, man. Grow a pair, as the saying goes, and quit bothering people. People should be able to speak freely. If they're not threatening you, then it doesn't need to be censored. Criticism is fair and always should be.
If you identify as having a pair, does it matter if you grew it or not?
Here we go.
I'm just curious. Medical and social security data of millions of Missourians compromised in a MOVEit attack. So it's a couple of different things here. So the Colorado Department of Health Care Policy and Financing, that's the HCPF, they have confirmed that there is a sensitive medical data of more than 4 million patients that was compromised in a MOVEit mass hack. And the data that was compromised because IBM, the big player out there, one of the state's vendors, used the MOVEit application to move HCPF data files in the normal course of business. And the compromised data includes, we talk about this a lot, patients' full names, date of birth, home address, social security numbers, Medicaid, Medicare ID numbers, income information, clinical and medical data, including lab results and medication, and health insurance information. We talk about similar stories like this on this show maybe once a month. That's my guess. And healthcare organizations, they are prime targets for cyber attacks just because of the large amount and sensitive information that they have on their servers. And IBM has yet to publicly confirm that it was affected by the MOVEit mass attack. Shame on you, IBM. The breach of IBM's MOVEit systems also impacted Missouri's Department of Social Services, the DSS. And this is through a number of affected individuals, but it's not yet known how many people. So Missouri's DSS said that data vulnerability did not directly impact any DSS systems, but the data impacted belonged to DSS. So make that for what you will. And they say that the affected individuals, it's like market conditions, they are requested or advised to monitor their account for unauthorized activity and to take steps to protect their identity. This is basically the horse that's left the barn. And if it ever comes back, you shut it. But until then, it's out in the wild. What an absolute disaster this is turning out to be. But these health organizations, they have to be more diligent. And IBM, too, should be more diligent with the information that they are storing, because this information is extremely sensitive and it could be damning to an individual. Somebody could use this to harm somebody moving forward. It could be very costly moving forward for a lot of these people. And how much faith do you have in it? It's almost like, I don't know. But again, it just goes to show you the digitization of all our information. It continues to go down this path. And a lot of this information, it's prime target for these hackers. They got to do better than this. This is really, really sad stuff.
You're relying on too many things here. Like, let's just look at the moving parts in this particular story. Okay. You have the Colorado Health Department, right? You have the MOVEit software. You have the people preparing the data. You have presumably the recipients, and you have IBM sort of as an interplay in all those different elements. What is the likelihood that over a long enough time with enough valuable data in place, someone along that chain is not going to get compromised? It's almost zero. And as the complexity of the attacks grows and the surface area for those attacks expands because of that complexity, you're inviting trouble. We talk about this a lot in KYC AML in finance. the more data you take from people who are using your services and store it in the same place or store it on the same kind of server, platform, whatever, the more valuable that becomes and the more of a target that has on its back. And when you have that problem, you're going to get people who are going after it because that value or that data, excuse me, is very valuable. And to see this again, you know, you said once a month, I would guess honestly, then we talk about a data breach, maybe not at this level in terms of sensitivity, but where the mechanism is almost the same, right? It's the same idea where there's too many people involved. It's kind of a hasty process. This is another example of a government agency being swindled as far as their data collection and data security. It's more and more frequent. And again, you and I have talked about the need for redundancy in medicine in terms of you know, equipment to save people's lives and keep them healthy when they're in hospitals or seeing doctors or whatever. This is another redundancy that healthcare needs to figure out, because one day something's going to happen that's going to be costly in a way that I don't think many people are expecting.
Agreed. What are you going to do? You don't have many options in these cases. You know, you have just so few healthcare professionals that are providing the services that you need, and you have to go to them, and they use these crappy services to ensure their data is secure, which is not. And oh well, it's another too bad, so sad moment.
It is what it is. It is what it is. That's it for tonight. That's the Access of Easy. Don't forget, like I said earlier, like, subscribe if you're on YouTube. If you're on audio, leave a review, leave a rating on Apple, on Spotify. It helps the
show. And check the website. It's going to be revamped, as Joey mentioned at the beginning of the show. If it hasn't already been so, it will be revamped moving forward, and it should be dynamite.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. Thanks, everybody. Until next time, take care of yourselves.